From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in 2017 when actress and singer Vanessa Hudgens spoke with Emily Lawrence, a reporter for wellandgood.com. Lawrence asked Hudgens what she was eating to keep her body toned. Hudgens credited the ketogenic or keto diet. Keto emphasizes high fat foods, butter, oils, meat, cheese, and low-carb vegetables. And the body, in turn, according to the diet, is supposed to burn that fat for fuel rather than glucose. Hudgens said, quote, "I think we've been brainwashed to think that fat is bad, but really, it's what's going to make you feel fuller longer, and your body can burn it and use it as fuel," end quote. Keto has been a favorite diet among many celebrities, but dietitians and medical professionals want to stress that it has risks. While it can be an effective tool for weight loss because it burns fat, research shows that relying on fat as fuel can come at the expense of heart, kidney, and liver health. Small studies also show keto may have negative impacts on bone health. Most dietitians consider keto a fad diet and generally try to steer their patients away from it. We've talked about keto and other fad diets a number of times on this program, and we continue the conversation today because not only do our listeners have questions about the best ways to improve their health through eating, but also because Rochester Lifestyle Medicine will be continuing the conversation this Sunday with a presentation called Debunking Keto, Paleo, and Other Low-Carb Diets. Brenda Davis is a registered dietitian and author and is giving that talk, and she joins us today to preview the presentation and also discuss plant-based eating. Brenda, welcome to Connections. Nice to have you.
Well, thank you so much for inviting me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Ted Barnett. Dr. Barnett is also with us, the founder and medical director for Rochester Lifestyle Medicine, founder and board chair of the Rochester Lifestyle Medicine Institute, co-coordinator of the Rochester Area Vegan Society, chair of the American College of Lifestyle Medicine's Type 2 Diabetes Reversal Task Force, and member of the ACLM's Diabetes Reversal Expert Consensus Panel. If you tried to give me one more title, I was not going to do it, Dr. Barnett. You get five. You get five only.
Good job, Doc. Thanks. Good job, Evan. Thank you so much for having me today. Hello, Brenda.
Hi, Ted.
Sunday, April 18th, 7 p.m. Ted, tell us a little bit about how people can access the event coming up.
So if you just go to our website, rochesterlifestylemedicine.org, and go to the calendar, you'll see you can sign up for the webinar with Brenda Davis at, 7 o'clock on this coming Sunday?
And, that's what I have, 7 o'clock Sunday.
Yep.
And it's Rochester
Lifestyle. Yeah, and
go ahead.
Yeah, rochesterlifestylemedicine.org. And if you haven't heard Brenda Davis speak before, you're in for a real treat. She's one of the best speakers on the planet.
Oh, thanks, Ted.
No pressure.
No pressure or anything.
Well, this should be the greatest hour of Connections ever. We'll see. And listeners, if you've got questions about keto, paleo, other kind of diets, and, you know, we call them fad diets. I don't mean to be pejorative about it. I mean, I know a lot of people are looking for ways to maybe change what they're eating, how they're feeling, how they're living. So I don't mean to sort of malign it, but I put it in that category just, I think, for what I hope are obvious and fair purposes. But whatever your experience, or if you've got questions about keto, paleo, or more, you can call the program. It's toll-free, 844-295-TALK. 844-295-8255, 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. You can email the program connections@WXXI.org. And Dr. Barnett, is that a fair term, fad diet? I mean, what's the term you use?
You know, I call it an ill-advised diet. I'm not a big fan of, I don't know, I don't usually use that term. But yeah, I think it's a very ill-advised diet.
Okay, well, we're going to talk about why. And okay. Brenda Davis, if I could start with you here, you know, we mentioned, for example, just one of the many celebrities that tend to tout these kinds of diets. And, you know, that's how things start rolling downhill. You get the public who sees these celebrities, they latch onto it. There's a big advertising component. There's a lot of money behind it. I want to start with keto. How do you feel about what keto is? Can you explain sort of what keto is and how do you feel about keto?
Well, I'll start off by saying I don't think it's fair to call it a fad diet.
Okay.
Ketogenic diet is actually a very powerfully therapeutic diet for children with epilepsy. And so from that perspective, it can be life-saving for children who have a type of epilepsy that doesn't respond well to medication. And so what it essentially does is it, you know, when you think about ketogenic, the word itself, well, it's essentially keto is ketones and genic is to generate, and it's essentially a diet that generates ketones. And it creates this kind of metabolic state called ketosis, which means ketones get to be very high in the bloodstream and in the urine. And it can actually be triggered by uncontrolled diabetes. It can be triggered by starving or fasting because your body needs to find some sort of fuel, especially for the brain. And then it can be triggered by these what we call ketogenic diets, which are diets that are very low in carbohydrates, very high in fat. And the basic, you know, premise of the diet is that if you shift to, you know, this fat-burning metabolism, you'll lose weight pretty effortlessly. So it's gone from being a diet that was used to treat epilepsy to this sort of popular keto diet for weight loss. And that's where I have the concern about the use of this diet. And even for children with epilepsy, there are some very, very significant risks that are associated with ketogenic diets.
And Dr. Barnett, do you echo that? Is that how you feel about keto?
Absolutely. Yeah. You heard me hesitate to call it a fad diet because there are some uses, and it's been around a long time, so it's not exactly a fad. But it's for the way most people use it to, you know, just to lose weight is, I think, very, very ill-advised.
Okay. Now, Dr. Barnett, why do you think something like keto has become so popular then?
Well, great question. I'm not really sure I'm an expert on the social dynamics, but, you know, it definitely works certainly in the short run. And, you know, I think there's something about eating a lot of meat and a lot of fat that appeals to certain people. And there's, as Brenda said, there's a lot of, you know, or maybe you said, there's a lot of marketing behind it. I think, and people do lose weight. There's no question that they lose weight when they do, you know, keto or they do the paleo diet, which is similar, or the Atkins diet. They're all basically in the same category of low carb, high fat, high protein. And as Brenda pointed out, they promise they have long-term health risks.
So Brenda, when it comes to the main reasons that people say they want to use keto, I mean, typically it's to lose weight, but it's also to sort of control, as Vanessa Hudgens said, she feels like it helps her control her appetite, that she feels fuller, that she doesn't want to binge on food, that this is a way to kind of keep her feeling consistently good and full throughout the day. Are there better ways to do that? What do you think about keto as a vehicle for that?
Well, there's no question that when your body is in a state of ketosis, it depresses appetite. So there's no question about that. You feel less hungry, and that's one of the advantages of a ketogenic diet. But the problem with this is that the diet is an extremely profoundly poor quality diet. It curtails the foods that provide us with fiber and phytochemicals and antioxidants like fruits and vegetables and whole grains and legumes and all of these things that help us to maximize the components in foods that are the most protective. And so when you eat a very, very high fat diet, it ends up being a very low quality diet. And in fact, so much so that there's, I don't know if you've ever heard of this, there's a U.S. Best Diet Rankings that's done every year. And the keto, in terms of the best diets for healthy eating, out of 35 diets in 2020, it ranked dead last. And it almost always does, because it's so high in saturated fat, and it has such a great potential for nutritional deficiencies as well. And of course, it has multiple adverse side effects. So there are a lot of concerns about the nutritional quality of these ketogenic diets.
All right, so listeners, we've sort of we've had a lot to say already about keto. So listeners, if you want to share your thoughts on keto, if you've got questions, or if you feel like maybe there's something you don't understand, again, you can call the program, and our guests are happy to help with that. It's 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255. On the subject of lists and rankings of diets, our guests are right. Brenda's right. Ketos usually last or near the end. But from U.S. News, quote, for the fourth consecutive year, the Mediterranean diet ranks as the number one best overall diet. Research suggests the diet can help ward off chronic diseases and improve longevity. The Mediterranean diet also claimed the top spot in five different lists. Best diets for healthy eating, tied for number one. Easiest diets to follow. Best diets for diabetes. Best plant-based diets and best heart-healthy diets, tied for number one. Let me ask both of you about that. Brenda Davis, often Mediterranean diets has fish in it. But, you know, I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of variations of it. How do you feel about Mediterranean diet?
Well, I think that Mediterranean diets and DASH diets and these kinds of similar diets are actually a huge leap in the right direction when we compare them to what we call the standard American diet or a SAD diet or a Western diet. There are so many advantages because they are predominantly plant-based patterns of eating. And so when you're, you know, maximizing your intakes of fruits and vegetables and whole grains and legumes, that's a very good thing. So the big question is, are there better diets? And in my view, I think the thing that puts Mediterranean diets higher up than some of the other plant-based diets is simply because they are fairly easy for people to follow and they're quite acceptable. And so, and of course, with in terms of fish, when you replace meat and pork and processed meats and so forth with fish, again, that's a good thing. So, but we would, you know, I think Ted and I would, Dr. Barnett and I would agree that you're better off replacing the meat with beans or some sort of, you know, tofu or something like that.
Dr. Barnett, what do you say to the pescatarians in the listening audience then?
Sure. So I think Brenda raises a really good point, which is, you know, what are you replacing something with? So, you know, what is the fish replacing? And the fish is replacing red and processed meat. So that's great, right? Because those are, you know, those are things you want to be avoiding. But adding fish into the diet, there's a couple of issues with fish. I would say, well, the two issues basically are health and environment. So it's really not possible for everybody on the planet to consume healthy, you know, supposed, quote, healthy fish. So basically, you know, salmon from the North Atlantic or from Alaska, from the North Pacific. So that's kind of, just from an environmental standpoint, it's not a diet that we can sustain. It's not something we can, that everybody can possibly eat. Then the other question is whether fish itself is healthy. And fish is very contaminated. You know, there's mercury, which, you know, from all the coal-fired power plants. And, you know, I don't think you can argue that if you can get really good fish and have a small amount of it a couple of times a week, I'm not going to say that that's not going to be part of a healthy diet. But that's not the only part of the, you know, what makes the Mediterranean diet healthy. What makes the Mediterranean diet really healthy is what Brenda said, which is that most of the calories are coming from whole plants.
That is the most measured you've ever been on eating fish, I think, on this program.
Oh, you go.
You're getting soft, Dr. Barnett. Come on.
Sorry. Well, you may not know this about me personally, but I grew up on Long Island Sound in Connecticut, and we went fishing every weekend of most of the year. So it was hard for me to give up fish. I personally don't eat fish. You know, we're completely vegan in our family. But I, as far as, you know, making the scientific argument that a small amount of fish in the diet is incompatible with health. You know, the healthiest people on the planet really, you know, live in Okinawa, Japan, you know, one of the blue zones. And they're, you know, basically getting, again, most of their calories are coming from whole plants, but some of their calories are coming from fish.
Okay, and I know there is there are consistently questions about whether fish can help with heart health. Before I get Jeff in Pittsford, Paul in Brighton on the phone, hang there, guys. Let me just ask Dr. Barnett and Brenda about that. I mean, do you trust research, Dr. Barnett, that says fish can help with heart health?
I'm going to defer to Brenda on that one. I think she's what do you think, Brenda?
Well, I think there is absolutely no question. If you replace meat, any meat, with fish, you will have cardiovascular benefits. Fish is our, you know, predominant source of long-chain omega-3 fatty acids. It's much lower in saturated fat than other meats. So definitely there is a benefit by replacing meat with fish. Now, on the other side, if we look at cardiovascular disease among, you know, similar health-conscious populations with different dietary patterns, what we see is we still see a benefit for vegetarian and vegan individuals as compared to the pesco vegetarians in terms of cardiovascular disease. I think the last study that I saw from Epic Oxford showed a 13% risk reduction for the fish eaters and a 22% risk reduction for the vegetarians and vegans. And in the Adventist Health Study 2, it was, you know, similar among men. Among women, we didn't see any significant differences, but among men, the differences were actually quite significant, and the vegan men did better than the vegetarian men, and the vegetarian men did better than the pesco vegetarian men.
All right. We've got questions piled up, which is not a surprise, as we talk to Brenda Davis, who is a registered dietitian and author and a member of the American College of Lifestyle Medicine's Type 2 Diabetes Reversal Task Force and a member of the ACLM's Diabetes Reversal Expert Consensus Panel. And she will be a guest of Rochester Lifestyle Medicine. Dr. Ted Barnett is the founder and medical director for Rochester Lifestyle Medicine. They have an event with Brenda this coming Sunday, April 18th, 7 p.m. via Zoom, debunking keto, paleo, and other low-carb diets. You can register now at rochesterlifestylemedicine.org if you are so inclined. Let's get to your phone calls. Jeff in Pittsford first. Go ahead, Jeff.
Thanks, Evan, and hi, Ted and Brenda. My first is a comment. A lot of the weight loss with these keto and paleo diets is due to water loss, not real weight loss. A lot of these people on these diets, they're observing muscle wasting in these people. So I want to make that comment. But the question is, a lot of proponents of these paleo diets are saying that the proof is in the blood lipid work. They say a drop in triglycerides, a drop in cholesterol. Is that really true?
Well, I can tell you that we certainly do see a drop in triglycerides, but we don't see a drop in LDL cholesterol, which is the, you know, the form of cholesterol that is more strongly associated with cardiovascular risk. We actually see a significant increase in LDL cholesterol, and that's one of the adverse health consequences of a therapeutic ketogenic diet for children with epilepsy. Is their risk of heart disease goes up very, very substantially.
Okay, great. What about the water loss for people on the paleo diet and also a lot of muscle loss for people on that diet?
Yeah, well, we actually have some metabolic ward trials that are really quite interesting, and metabolic ward trials are trials where people can't cheat. They're in a metabolic ward, so their food is really controlled very significantly. And these metabolic ward trials, what they did, there was one in 2016 and one in 2020. What they actually did was it was a crossover design, so people were on, you know, the sort of the baseline diet for 4 weeks, and then on the ketogenic diet for 4 weeks on the first trial, and then on the second trial, they actually compared people eating a keto diet to people eating a low-fat plant-based diet, which was sort of the exact opposite: 75% carbohydrate on the plant-based diet and 75% fat on the keto diet. And what they found is they found that people on the plant-based diet had lower blood pressure, lower cholesterol, and they had increased fat loss. So they were losing 51 grams of fat a day versus 16 grams on the ketogenic diet. So a very significant difference. And as mentioned, ketogenic diet, it is a lot of water loss.
Okay. Thanks, Brenda.
Yeah, thanks very much. I appreciate the phone call, Jeff. Dr. Burnett, anything you need to add there?
No, I think Brenda covered that beautifully.
Cosign from Dr. Barnett. Paul in Brighton.
Exactly. I concur.
Go ahead, Paul.
Thank you. A little bit of a twist here, and just want to say no disrespect to your guests. They sound extremely knowledgeable and very concerned and doing great work. But just the American approach to diets in general, diet book, you can't go wrong by writing a diet book or a diet article or basically having anything to say about diets. And what I really get a kick out of, when I visit one of my well-known local grocery stores in the checkout line, and I see every week I see Dr. Oz telling me that either I or my wife lose 14 pounds in 1 week if we follow his latest fad diet. And I just wonder how that guy has a medical license. 14 pounds in a week sounds a little bit extreme to me, but I'm also getting a little bit off track. But as I say, just this constant, you can't go on by writing about diets. Thank you very much. Have a great day.
Okay. Paul, thank you. Let me start with Brenda on that. What do you think, Brenda?
Well, I certainly don't disagree. I think that it makes sense for people to be consuming diets if they need to lose weight, which, you know, unfortunately, the numbers in the U.S. and even in Canada are not great. 70% of the population being overweight or obese is not great. And so a lot of people would be well advised to lose some weight. But to say 14 pounds in a week, I think, is not safe or sustainable. I would recommend a much healthier way of approaching weight loss, which would be, to me, a lot of high-fiber plant foods in the diet, and a reasonable calorie restriction that would result in the loss of, you know, a pound or two a week, which can be sustained over time.
Dr. Barnett? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so the caller raises a really interesting question, which is, you know, if we can make something controversial or make it sound like it's a fad, you know, maybe we can get a book out of it or, start a business. And, you know, one of the things that we did at Rochester Lifestyle Medicine Institute is we said, well, okay, people don't really necessarily believe what they hear. Let's offer them a chance to actually try it out themselves. So since 2018, we've been running a 15-day whole food plant-based jumpstart, which now, because of the pandemic, has gone virtual, and we run it through Google Classroom and through seven Zoom calls, and people get to find out whether we're telling them the truth or not, because what we recommend is an entirely whole food plant-based diet, and they get their labs drawn at the beginning of the 15 days, and they get their labs drawn at the end, and obviously they measure their blood pressure and their weight, and uniformly, we're seeing amazing results, and the patients are saying, gee, I wish I'd known about this before, because it really does work. You're not making this up. And I think that's what people need. You know, we live in the age of fake news and all kinds of conspiracy theories. Well, here's a chance for people just to try it out themselves. And this is a little bit of, you know, a pitch for our program, and people can see it on our website if they like. It's now gone international. We've done it in 35 states and three Canadian provinces and the UK. We've had close to 1,000 patients go through it. And it's really an opportunity for people to find out. And people do it because they want to lose weight, because they want to get their cholesterol under control or their blood pressure under control. And then they find out that there's all these other things that are happening that they weren't expecting. Like, not only has my cholesterol dropped 60 points in the last 15 days, but gee, my joints don't hurt anymore. My reflux is better. My skin is clearing up, and I'm not in a bad mood anymore. My depression is lifting. So I like that question, because it does raise the question about what's the truth about all this. And obviously, you know, we think that there's one general area trend, which is toward the closer you can get toward a whole food plant-based diet, the better off you can be. And that turns out to be relatively high in carbohydrate and relatively low in fat and moderate in protein.
So I think it's a good question, and you know, I'd be eager to hear what your listeners have to say.
Okay, thank you for that, Paul, and sure. Thank you, Dr. Barnett and Brenda Davis, our guests, talking about not just keto, not just paleo, and you know, sort of related diets, but answering your questions about plant-based eating and across the spectrum there. So let me get Paul in Fairport next, because we don't have Paul in Brighton. Paul in Brighton, you can call us back, tell us what you think if you like. In the meantime, let's get as much as we can here. Paul in Fairport. Go ahead, Paul.
Yes, thanks for taking my call, and good afternoon. I've been plant-based for over a year now, and my question is regarding sugar, natural and manufactured sugar. Every day I make smoothies for myself, which include bananas, strawberries, blueberries. I also throw kale, spinach, or beets in it. I'm just kind of curious, am I taxing my pancreas too much to make insulin to offset the sugar I'm taking in, and how much natural sugar or God sugar, you know, however you want to call it, from fruits and vegetables is okay? And then if I wanted to add additives of syrup and honey, is that okay to add, or is that considered unnatural?
Let's have Brenda answer that one.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I would say that in general, adding fruits and vegetables, which do have some natural sugars, is not an issue for most people. And however, when you're blending and making smoothies, you're definitely making those sugars more readily absorbable. And so I would say, you know, go reasonably lightly on the amount of fruit that you add to smoothies. But in general, even for people with diabetes, there have been studies looking at sort of what's the upper limit of fruit that should be consumed. And we haven't received any, I think, solid evidence to suggest that you really need to be restricting fruit. Unless you have very high triglycerides, I just wouldn't worry about it much, because fruit comes packaged with fiber and phytochemicals, and the sugars in fruits are naturally fairly slowly absorbed. Now, the question of adding concentrated sweeteners is a very different question, and my advice is to absolutely minimize your intake of concentrated sweeteners. So, for example, if you like to drink a sweet beverage like a soda, I would say, you know, drink soda water with a little bit of sliced fruit in it, or add an ounce of, you know, blueberry juice or something to give it some flavor. But I would not consume liquid concentrated sweeteners at all, zero. I would just remove them from the diet. And then adding sweeteners to, you know, prepared foods, to salad dressings or baked goods or so on, I would say minimize your use and try as much as possible to use whole foods instead. So, for example, I'll use a little bit of dried fruits like dates in a baked good to replace the sugars, because you're getting more nutritional value. There's nothing that has lower nutrient density than concentrated sweeteners. They just don't have much nutritional value, and so you just want to minimize your intake.
Dr. Barnett, do you want to add to that?
No, I totally concur with that. I'm just curious, the listener or the questioner has been on a plant-based diet for a year. What were your goals?
Really just wanted to try it. My sister had been on it for a couple of years, and I just wanted to try it and see how I felt. You know, I've always grown up in an Italian family, so I always had a lot of pasta and sauce on Sundays and meatballs. And I find that I'm much less bloated after being plant-based. I feel a little more energetic. I did lose weight, although I am not the person who probably needs to lose weight. But I do run and lift and bike quite a bit, so I wasn't too surprised by that. But I've enjoyed the diet. I've always been healthy all along. I mean, every morning I have a glass of water with lemons, you know, in it for lemon water. And I really don't add any, you know, outside unnatural sugars to my food at all. And I just enjoyed the diet. It's been fine. It's a little challenging, though, because I do try to put weight on, and I do struggle with that aspect of it, though.
Sure. Good. I'm just curious. Yeah, no, I think you're doing the right thing. And, if you're feeling good and you're able to work out, that's great.
Yeah, and I would add, in terms of trying to maintain or even gain a little bit of weight, that one of the things about plant-based diets is they tend to be less calorically dense, and which means you need to eat more food. And the other thing is to add, you know, a little bit more of some of the higher fat foods like nut and seed butters and avocados that can help to, because they're fairly calorically dense relative to most other plant foods, so it can allow you to eat more calories with not by and not increasing your volume too much. But you may need to eat more often, you may need to eat larger portions as well.
Okay, great. And that's the experience that's the experience we have with our patients, is we really want them to eat a lot. You know, oftentimes we don't want them to be hungry. We want people to eat a lot. As long as you're eating the right food, usually the weight comes off naturally, and the blood pressure and cholesterol come down. So, yeah, you're on the right track. Congratulations.
Yeah. It's RochesterLifestyleMedicine.org if you want to be part of the event and learn more from Brenda Davis on this coming Sunday night, April 18th at 7 p.m. It's all online. And I've got to get our only break in, and we're going to come back. We've got phone lines pretty much full. We've got a couple lines still open if you've got questions or comments, listeners, but we've got a lot of your thoughts and questions to work through with Brenda Davis, Dr. Ted Barnett with us, and we'll do that on the other side of this break. I'm Evan Dawson, Wednesday on The Next Connections. Two more candidates for Rochester City Council join us on Connections, an ongoing series of conversations. There are nearly 20 candidates for City Council this year, and the election is June 22nd. That's the primary. Typically decides who ends up on council, and council will have a lot to say about police reform, economic development, and more. Continue to meet the candidates on Wednesdays with us on Connections. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Let me get Don in Fairport next. Go ahead, Don.
Good afternoon. My question concerns something with my granddaughter. She got diagnosed with type 1 diabetes at 3 years old. She's 9 now. And my daughter is just, I just wanted to know, where can I get the best information, nutritionally speaking, for to control blood sugar and avoid the highs and the lows?
Sure.
Yeah, Brenda, Ted,
Brenda, you're the expert on that. What do you think?
Well, I definitely wouldn't consider myself the expert on type 1 diabetes. Most of my work has been with type 2 diabetes. However, what I can say is that when you consider sort of the long-term health consequences of type 1 diabetes, I really do believe that you can most effectively minimize the risk of all of the complications we see by consuming a diet that is, you know, very, very well put together and really focuses on high-fiber whole plant foods. And so, you know, in terms of support what kinds of resources, I myself have written a couple of books. They are focused on type 2 diabetes, but they, you know, one is called Kick Diabetes Essentials, but the guidelines there would still be very appropriate for children. And then the other book that I've written is called Nourish, that is a book specifically designed to help parents, you know, put together adequate and protective diets for their children. And so those two resources, I think, would be of value. There is a group called Mastering Diabetes, and the group is run by two young men with type 1 diabetes, and they promote plant-based diets as well. But I think their information would be also very useful in this case.
Okay.
Right. I agree. Brenda, I'm glad I was trying to remember the name of that group. It's called Mastering Diabetes.
That's correct. Yeah.
Right. And they are terrific. So they both had type 1 diabetes. And then they put this together on their own. One of them's a PhD, the other is an MPH. And, you know, one of the things that we've learned about type 1 diabetes is it responds pretty well to the same diet that we recommend for type 2 diabetes, but you're never going to get off your insulin, obviously, because your pancreas just isn't making insulin with type 1 diabetes. But you can reduce your need for
for insulin with following a whole food plant-based diet. So, yeah, check out Mastering Diabetes. They've got a book, and they're a terrific organization, actually.
Yeah.
I'll look for it, definitely. Thank you for your time. That's a great tip. All of you, thank you very much for your time.
Yeah, thank you, Don.
You're very welcome.
Good luck to you. Let me get Rich in Rochester next. Go ahead, Rich.
Hey, how are you doing, Evan?
Good, sir.
First of all, one thing that you had a caller mention earlier, people get too caught up in that word natural. There's no, if it is, and I'm not a dietitian, but from a chemical point of view.
Are you there, Rich? We lost you. Okay. Rich, I'm sorry about that. Let me get Gloria in Canandaigua. Go ahead, Gloria.
Hi. This is a question not for me, but it is for a relative of mine who has post-polio and was quite heavy. The doctor prescribed the keto diet for him. He did lose quite a bit of weight, but he also has diabetes. And I'm wondering if you have done any work with people who have post-polio syndrome.
So let me try to answer that. First of all, I have not personally, and as my friend has, but I don't think that polio is a significant issue here. The issue is the diabetes, and I'm assuming he's fairly he's overweight.
Yes.
Right, and you know. This going onto a keto diet is not going to help the diabetes at all. So type 2 diabetes is secondary to what's called insulin resistance, where your pancreas is still producing insulin, unlike type 1 diabetes where your pancreas stops producing insulin. And with type 2 diabetes, your pancreas is still making insulin, but the cells in your body are not responding to it. So the key is to become insulin responsive, to get rid of that insulin resistance. And keto does the exact opposite. Now, the reason people's numbers seem to be under control when they're on the keto is they're just not taking in any carbohydrates, so you're not challenging the system, so your blood sugar is not going to rise. But if you take somebody who thinks their diabetes is under control because they have a keto and give them a carbohydrate challenge, their blood sugar is going to be go sky high potentially. So the key really is to get all that fat out of the cell, because what you've got is this intramyocellular fat that's causing the insulin resistance. So, and it happens fairly quickly. So you get somebody on a low-fat, you know, whole food plant-based diet, their insulin resistance drops pretty rapidly, you know, within a week or two. And they start to get under control in a natural way. So I would say that I think that the doctor is, you know, somewhere in the Rochester area, you know, have them take a look at our website. Even if they're not in our area, they can take a look at our website and certainly get in touch with us. And that's one of the reasons we actually really like this 15-day whole food plant-based program that we've started, is doctors can refer their patients to it. And within a couple of weeks, they find out whether we're telling them the truth, because it happens so quickly. So that's what I would recommend in this situation.
I understand about the diabetes, but he and his wife really think that the post-polio, and there's very little, limited information about post-polio, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So...
yeah,
I'm sorry, I can't contribute much either. I haven't worked with people that have the post polio syndrome.
Yeah.
So, but I completely agree with Dr. Barnett that that unfortunately, you know, putting him on a ketogenic diet, I think is not a great idea, because they not only do ketogenic diets adversely affect insulin resistance, making people more insulin resistant, but they also negatively affect the gut microbiome, which can, you know, accelerate complications. It's amazing. We've only known, I don't know, for a couple of decades, how important a healthy gut microbiome is. It affects every single body system you can imagine, and a ketogenic diet just absolutely decimates your gut microbiome, which makes every risk of diabetes escalated. So it's It's just, to me, it's a bad idea. And the other thing is, you know, it's not even just your gut microbiome and your insulin resistance. It's inflammation. It's oxidative stress. All of these things come into play, and they're all worsened by a ketogenic diet, in my experience.
Well, I really appreciate what you're saying, and I will send this on to them so that they, you know, to sure. It's,
yeah, thank you.
We'd be happy to have your friend make an appointment to see one of our providers at Rochester Lifestyle Medicine Group, because it's an interesting
challenge. They don't live in Rochester. They don't live in Rochester, but perhaps they will come. I don't, you know, that may be in the fall. So
sure.
Okay, well, we keep people by telemedicine very, now. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Good luck, Gloria. Yep. Another listener, I don't know the name here, is asking about intermittent fasting. Please ask your guests to provide their opinions on weight loss using intermittent fasting. What would be the best diet to use with intermittent fasting?
I would love to hear Brenda's answer on this one.
Well, you know, it's I think the whole there are all sorts of different types of fasting that are becoming popular now, and intermittent fasting and time restricted feeding and periodic fasting and so forth, and intermittent fasting for a lot of people is a form of time restricted feeding where you eat maybe for 10 hours of the day, and then for the other 14, you're not eating at all, or you might eat just for 8 hours a day. And so that's one form of intermittent fasting. And then the other form that is quite popular is to fast for 1 day a week, or you know, 2 days a week for some people. And I think, again, what type of diet best supports a sort of intermittent fasting? To me, you know, the big question is that you have to ask yourself about any diet you're choosing is, number one, you know, is this diet going to reduce my risk of the diseases that kill most of the people in you know, North America? Is the diet going to reduce inflammation and oxidative stress and dysbiosis and lipotoxicity that we just talked about? How will this diet support overall health? And so to me, again, it makes sense if you're doing intermittent fasting to be on a largely whole food plant-based diet.
Andrew writes to say, Evan, since experts started touting low-fat diets, obesity has skyrocketed. Most chronic diseases are the result of chronic inflammation, and spiking blood sugar is among the most reliable ways to create inflammation in your body. The CEO of the American Diabetes Association, who was their first CEO to actually have the disease, adopted a low-carb diet to stop taking insulin and get off almost all of her medications. That's from Andrew. Dr. Barnett, what do you think?
So I think the key word there is touting a low-fat diet. Isn't that what how it was phrased? Because truthfully, people have not gone on a low-fat diet in this country. They've been asked to go. You know, at various times it's been recommended, but it hasn't really happened. In fact, the percentage of calories from fat has probably gone up a bit in the population since those recommendations came. So to be critical of a diet that has actually never really taken hold and state that that's the reason we have this obesity epidemic and consequentially a diabetes epidemic, I think it's really a false claim. I always ask people, you know, we have a diabetes epidemic in this country, and I always ask people, do you think it's because all of a sudden we started eating too much fruit? That's not the case. The problem is people are for eating highly processed food and too much meat and dairy, and not getting enough exercise. So that's my opinion on that. I don't think it's happened. I don't think you can blame the obesity epidemic on the fact that we recommended a diet that actually nobody ever really took seriously.
I agree, and I think that was beautifully said. But on the other hand, as well, we need to recognize, I think, that our risk of chronic disease is less well determined by the relative amounts of various macronutrients that we consume than the sources of those macronutrients. So if we look at the blue zones, for example, which is the places in the world where people live the longest, healthiest lives, we see some of those folks consuming very low-fat diets, like in Okinawa, Japan, and we see others of those folks consuming quite high-fat diets, like in Ikaria, Greece. Most, you know, average around the 25% of calories from fat. But that what really matters is where is the fat coming from. When the fat is packaged in whole plant foods like nuts and seeds, it's far less of an issue than when that fat is packaged in processed foods or we're, you know, deep frying foods and you know, those kinds of sources of fat. So I think that is also an important note. But no question, although we were advocating lower-fat diets, that really never did, you know, happen.
All right. An email from a dietitian in Syracuse withholding a name says, Evan, I think oftentimes conversation about veganism can come with a holier-than-thou mentality. We need to be mindful of people's limitations. What are your guests doing to keep that in mind? Brenda, what do you think?
Well, I would say very, very simply that this is not about being holier than thou. This is not about personal purity. It is about doing what we can do as human beings to reduce our risk of disease, but also to leave a softer footprint on the planet and to be kinder to animals. And that's what being vegan is all about. It you know, there are all sorts of different, ways of being an ethical human being. And this is one that I think has a lot to do with our, you know, something we do three times a day, we eat. And I think we can do an awful lot to, you know, just lessen the harm, just to create a world with less pain, suffering, and death by eating more plant-based foods. And it's true that there are some people in the world that being vegan wouldn't work for. People in the far north who rely on sort of still a hunting, gathering kind of lifestyle, but we have, you know, close to 8 billion people on this planet. And, you know, if everyone ate a sort of a paleo or keto style diet that's mainly animal products, we'd be in big trouble. We would need, David Katz did the math, about 15 planet Earths to sustain the current population. So to me, it makes me sad when I see vegans having that sort of holier-than-thou attitude, because most of us weren't vegans our whole lives. We ate meat. We ate an omnivorous diet, and we've since made the switch. It doesn't make us better than anyone else. It's just a way of I think trying to create a better health and a kinder planet.
Dr. Barnett.
It was beautifully said, Brenda. I totally agree with that. And, you know, when we teach people, and we've gone through, every month we have another cohort of people who take this journey with us, you know, between 30 and 40 people. And I think I try to have a sense of humor about it. I refer to vegan as the V word when people first, you know, encounter us. But, you know, what's really interesting is as people begin to see the health benefits and realize that this diet actually does work, and does help people feel better and their numbers get better, then they become open to hearing about the other aspects of what, you know, amounts to the vegan lifestyle, which is to, as Brenda said, leave a softer footprint. They become open to those things because nobody really wants to hurt animals, but they sort of grew up thinking they had to. And when they find out that not only do they not have to hurt animals, but they actually feel better when they're not, and they feel better when they're not, you know, consuming food that adds to the carbon footprint of their diet, then I think that having felt it makes them more open to that aspect of the diet.
Okay, and one more quick one from Denise says, I think we should be open-minded for people who have limited resources. WIC, for example, covers eggs, milk, cheese, canned fish. What kind of advice do you have for people who either live on limited incomes or live in food deserts where they don't have easy access to fresh fruits and veggies? Brenda, what do you think?
Well, you know, it's so interesting because some of the very poorest people on the planet are plant-based because they have to be. They can't afford expensive animal products, so they live on beans and rice and often grow a little bit of, you know, their own produce wherever they live. But overall, I have great, you know, compassion for people who are in food deserts, and I would just encourage them to consider somehow slowly starting to add more legumes in place of meat and you know, grains, and these kinds of things can be a wonderful foundation. And then with fruits and vegetables, you know, growing sprouts is really cheap. Growing, you know, in pots, a few tomatoes and cucumbers can be really helpful if you're able to do that. And otherwise, you know, trying to come up with, there are all sorts of really creative ways of helping people in food deserts. They're bringing fruit and vegetable vans to some of these places and starting little farmers markets and doing whatever you can to get engaged in those kinds of activities, I would suggest.
Down to our last 30 seconds, Dr. Barnett, remind listeners what you'd like them to join you for on Sunday.
So Sunday, if, we'd love to have you come here. Brenda Davis, who you've just been listening to. She's going to be doing a webinar at 7 o'clock. And if you go to our website, rochesterlifestylemedicine.org, and check out the calendar, you can sign up, and we'll send you a link to the webinar. And we'd love to see you there.
You can register at rochesterlifestylemedicine.org, debunking keto, paleo, and other low-carb diets. Dr. Barnett, always nice to have you. Thank you for being with us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
And Brenda Davis. Oh, it's always good to have not only Ted, but the guests that they bring. And Brenda Davis, it's been a pleasure. Thanks for answering so many questions from listeners. Enjoy the event on Sunday, and thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much for inviting me. Have a great day.
You too. And thanks to Rob Braden, engineer, Megan Mack, producer. I'm Evan Dawson. Finally, a dry afternoon. Hope you enjoy it. And we're back with you Wednesday on member-supported public radio.